Sweet are the uses of adversity, which, like the toad, ugly and venomous, wears yet a precious jewel in its head. And this our life finds tongues in trees, books in running brooks, sermons in stones, and good in everything. William Shakespeare. In May of 2016, I was at an ecumenical conference in Taiwan representing Emmanuel College and the United Church of Canada. There were a number of other Canadians there, including an Indigenous elder by the name of Adrian Jacobs. Adrian is a theologian and a teacher and the principal of the Sandy Soto Spiritual Center in Manitoba, which is the seminary for the United Church's Indigenous ministries. Adrian is not a person who fills space with chatter or small talk, so when he speaks, you are wise to listen. During a break in the presentations, I went for a walk near the conference center and I came across Adrian. He was still and quiet and looking out over the land. It felt as though I had intruded on a holy moment, but before I could back away, he said something, not to me in particular, just a truth he intuited. "The land is tired," he said. "The land is tired." Creation stories are as varied as humanity itself. Seemingly since the beginning of us, we have asked the big questions of how has this all come to be? What is the purpose of this existence? How do we fit in? And seemingly since the beginning of us, we have answered these questions with stories. Big stories, epic stories, competing stories. Our ancient ancestors did not seek literal truth with these stories, but mythic and mystic truth, the kind of truth that mediates meaning and transmits values from generation to generation. These origin stories reflect and reinforce what is important to a particular people. They are meant to inform how they should relate to each other and the world around them. When I was preparing for this service, this rural life service, I knew I wanted to read the first creation story found in the book of Genesis. But given the focus this morning on food and farming, issues very close to my heart, I had originally thought we would just read up to day 3, where the earth grows green, flowers in their freshness opened, color and goodness burst forth from the earth, young bushes budded, trees were heavy with fruit, and the earth's seed was strong, and God saw that it was good. But then, upon further reflection, I thought, no, we really need to talk about the animals too, so we should really read up to day 5, where the wind wakened the waters into life. Great sea monsters were born. Gleaming fish swarmed the seas. Winged birds of every kind rose out of the waters. Creeping things crawled from the sea. Wild animals ran free. The cattle roamed the grasslands, and God saw that it was good. But upon further reflection, it became obvious to me that the whole story was necessary. In fact, this is the point of this creation story, that all the days are necessary, all the parts are necessary. The day and the night, the air and water and soil, the sun, the moon and stars, the plant life and all the creatures and the people. The people are necessary too. It is only after we are created that God calls creation not just good, but very good. It is only then that the heavens and the earth were well and the mother of all things rested. This is the point. This is a story of a system, an ecosystem, in fact, where all parts interact with each other. All parts of creation are necessary, vital even to the whole. All must be created in order to reach rest, the holy rest that comes with balance, harmony, fulfillment, reciprocity. The point of the story is for us, the six-day creatures, to see that we are part of the story, not the whole story. God is the creator, not us. God is God, not us. This is why the ancients told and retold this narrative, and why we tell it now, and why we must continue to tell it again and again and again until it finally sinks in. Because what we see in the Bible and what we see in our daily living is that the holistic harmony God intends was disrupted and is continually disrupted by our presuming to take the place of God, by refusing to acknowledge our place in things, by continually demanding more and more and more for ourselves, like a vampire species sucking the life out of the rest of creation. When we singularly prioritize our own desires, when we fail to see that the whole of creation is sacred, the result was and is domination and destruction, exploitation and extinction. It is little wonder that on that day, Adrian Jacobs could feel the tiredness of the land. In the year 1900, globally, there were 7.9 hectares of land per person. Owing to population increases and land loss due to urbanization and suburbification and freeways through farmland, that figure had shrunk to 2 hectares in 2002. By 2050, it is expected that there will be about 1.5 hectares per person. And from that ever smaller plot of land, we will demand more and more. Much of the world's farmland is already virtually devoid of once native species and of plants and animals. Modern high-tech agriculture has basically turned farming into an arms race against nature, excluding everything from the land except the highly bred monocultures. These farming practices have a profound impact on the health, indeed existence, of the other creatures of creation. The animals, the plants, birds, the insects, microbes, fungi, and bacteria that provides the services that sustain life on this planet. When the natural systems are broken, we become reliant on the manufactured ones. Chemicals for fertilizer and pest control that then leach into the water and drift through the air and persist in the soil, making us more and more dependent on human interventions, which cause more and more unattended consequences. The story we tell in our modern world is not of creation. It is not of harmony. It is of disintegration, where nature is just seen as raw material, isolated elements that only have value when they are removed from the natural system, commodified, or run through a factory to turn it into something that can be sold and consumed and then discarded into landfills or oceans or shipped off to poorer countries to lie in great mountains of waste. And when this is the story we tell, when this is how we see creation, it is all too easy to see each other this way as well. The commodification of people, of only seeing the value in what each person can produce and consume, isolated cogs in the economic and militaristic cycles that never stop, slaves to the new gods of technology and productivity and busyness, which are never satisfied, which by their nature never rest. As Pope Francis writes in his encyclical Laudato Si on care of our common home, the current global situation engenders a feeling of instability and uncertainty, which in turn becomes a seedbed for collective selfishness. A seedbed for collective selfishness. When people become self-centered and self-enclosed, their greed increases. The emptier a person's heart is, the more they try to fill it with buying, owning, consuming. It becomes almost impossible to accept the limits imposed by reality. In this horizon, a genuine sense of the common good disappears. As more and more of us live in urban centers like this one, fewer and fewer of us interact in meaningful ways with the rhythms of nature and the other creatures of creation. We simply don't know any other way. We are more accustomed to the smell of car exhaust than sweetgrass, more conscious of condo tower cranes than maple trees, more comfortable with our children playing on lawns than in woodlands, much more familiar with shopping carts than garden trowels. By every measure we have, our disconnection from creation is disconnecting us from everything. We are losing our place in things. We are forgetting how to relate to each other. We are more isolated, distracted, angry, entitled, believing everything is about us or everything depends on us. I think the experience with Adrian Jacobs intuiting that the land is tired is on my mind this week because a number of people have spoken to me in the past days and expressed that they are tired. Tired, weary, exhausted, just hanging on. Perhaps you are feeling it too. Maybe it's COVID, maybe it's the war in Ukraine, or work expectations, or family stresses, or health challenges, or not one thing in particular you can put your finger on, but something perhaps feels off, out of balance. I am conscious that this is how I am feeling these days, as Bilbo Baggins says, like butter scraped over too much bread. But at least for me, it is a tiredness that will not be shaken off with a holiday, although I will take one in July. For me, it is the deeper rest, the holy Sabbath rest that comes with balance and beauty and harmony that I seek. And if this is something that you seek as well, thankfully, we have a wonderful teacher available to us, even here in the city, creation herself and the people who understand her ways. In her book, Braiding Sweetgrass, the indigenous writer and botanist Robin Wall Kimmerer has a chapter about traditional agriculture, specifically about three plants, corn, beans, and squash. These three sisters, as they are known, feed the people, feed the land, and as Kimmerer says, feed our imaginations, showing how we might live with balance and beauty and harmony. When the settlers first came to this land, with their monocultured straight row understanding of food production and saw the three-dimensional and somewhat chaotic nature of the three sisters' gardens, they assumed that indigenous people knew nothing of farming. But like in so many ways, they were wrong. What the first peoples knew and still know is that creation exists in relationship. Beings that are separated wither and die, but those who grow together in reciprocal relationships thrive. In the case of the three sisters, when seated together, each play their part. The corn sister shoots up first, straight and tall and with purpose. She needs to be there for the bean sister when she comes up next. Without the corn stalk to curl around towards the sun, the beans would be a tangled mat on the ground. And as the bean sister grows, her dense root system shores up and provides nitrogen to the shallow roots of the corn. Meanwhile, in her own good time, the late bloomer of the family, the squash sister, spreads out over the ground, keeping in the moisture and shading out the weeds, her prickly leaves warding off predators. The beauty of this relationship is that as each plant does what it is designed by the Creator to do, it benefits the whole. Many years after the first settlers came, scientific experiments confirmed what indigenous people knew all along, that the three sisters working together in harmony produced more food than if each was planted separately. Individual and mutual flourishing through reciprocal relationships. The way of the three sisters points to a deep wisdom. As Kimmerer writes, the most important thing each of us can know is our unique gift and how to use it in the world. Individuality is cherished and nurtured because in order for the whole to flourish, each of us has to be strong in who we are and carry our gifts with conviction so that they may be shared with others. Being among the sisters provides a visible manifestation for what a community can become when its members understand and share their gifts. In reciprocity, we fill our spirits as well as our bodies. Reciprocal relationships. This is how we build balance and live in harmony. This is how we re-energize the land and ourselves. By each person of creation, you and me and Matilda, the apple tree, the birds and bees, the trees and fleas, all living into our unique gifts, all understanding where we fit into the story and co-create the story. Harmony means understanding that it is not all about us, and it all doesn't depend on us. We are each a vessel of living potential, designed with purpose, sung into life by the Creator God's desire for relationship with us. God could not rest until we were created. God could not rest until you were here. You, perfect and loved, uniquely gifted to share all that you are into this community and into God's world. You are necessary and cherished and part of something wondrous. Wondrous and good. No, not just good, but very good. And on the seventh day, there was silence in heaven. The mighty wind of life was still. The sea was calm. The morning stars glistened, and earth slept. The work was finished. Creation had been born, and the mother of all things rested. It was a holy day. The heavens and the earth were well. God saw its fullness, and there was evening and morning, creation's seventh day.